Lucette Lagnado, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, was born in Cairo when it was considered a glamorous cosmopolitan city. But when Nasser expelled foreigners and Jews from Egypt, she and her family were forced to leave and finally settled in Brooklyn in the early 1960s. Lucette Lagnado's new memoir, The Man in the White Sharkskin Suit, My Family's Exodus from Old Cairo to the New World, is published by Echo, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to my show today. Hello.
Hi, I'm delighted to be here.
So who is the man in the white sharkskin suit?
The man in the white sharkskin suit is my father Leon, who was known throughout Cairo for his, he was a very tall man and quite elegant in his sort of signature outfit were entire suits made of white shark skin.
That would have been the height of fashion in Cairo or something unique to your father?
Oh, no. It was sort of what sort of Egyptian movie stars would wear. It's a kind of, in my mind, a mythical fabric because, believe it or not, I've never seen white shark skin. And I looked and looked for it in the course of working on this book, and people keep promising it to me, but they never deliver. So it's become like the sort of Excalibur, kind of an unattainable ideal.
Well, I think of white linen suits as being associated with that time. White shark skin would have been really interesting to see. What was his life like then? What was he doing?
Well, I think my favorite term for my dad in a sort of Cairo in its heyday was he was a boulevardier. There was a real cafe society, and it was, as you said, a sort of a glittering world which people have forgotten. It was a world where you would go to these cafes and you would hear four and five languages spoken at the same time, in the same sentence, in the same breath. Because you had this cosmopolitan culture, the French, the British, of course, and as well as the Greeks, the Armenians, and the Jews, and the Muslims. And they lived together, I think, in an amazingly harmonious way, which the world has forgotten. And so you have to imagine this intensely elegant and really very sensuous and life-loving society existing. My favorite description of old Cairo is that life never began before midnight.
What language did you speak in your household?
In my house, I spoke French, and Arabic was spoken, and my dad spoke fluently seven languages, and he was particularly famous for his exquisite English because he was very good friends with the British officers who were stationed in Cairo, and they gave him this wonderful nickname. They called him the Captain, Captain Phillips, and I've heard wonderful stories, whenever he'd approach, he had such a formidable bearing that sometimes the porters or doormen would stand up and salute, and but in my house, I myself spoke mostly French. I confess, a terrible Arabic student.
Well, why French of all languages? Since Arabic was the language of the country, and Ladino probably was the language of at least part of the Jewish community.
Some of the Jews, but mostly actually French. The culture, the kind of colonial, quasi-colonial culture in Egypt was split between the British and the French. And the British liked to run stuff. That's like what the Brits like to do. The French, on the other hand, like to spread their culture. They love their culture, you know? And so there were
Napoleon never really died.
No, absolutely not. And I was enrolled at like the age of four at the Lycée Français du Caire. And in fact, it was well known that the upper class Egyptian Muslims, for them too, French was almost the first language. And I've been told recently that even today, for the really gilded Egyptians in Egypt, now that they've gotten rid of everybody, including the French and the Brits and the Greeks and the Armenians and the Jews, French is still the language of choice.
Ah.
Isn't
well,
that amazing?
I wonder
and
if Mahfouz speaks French or... Well, but
yes.
That's a whole... Was your father born in Egypt?
No, my father, and that became an important element of this book, another layer. My father was from Syria, and I come from a Syrian Jewish family, which is its own culture. So if one considers the sort of the world of old Egypt, you know, It's kind of interesting. It's both a mixture of very libertine and also very strict, but nothing compares to the world of old Syria and Syrian Jewry. And what's amazing is even now, you know, Syrian Jews are all over the world, and they're still known for being incredibly clannish. And even though they may live in New York or Buenos Aires or Mexico City or Geneva, you know, their life is like Aleppo of the 1920s and maybe even the 1820s. And it's a culture that's, you know, deeply rigorous, very religious, and very in love with money, incidentally.
Well, there have been some famous bankers from the Syrian families. The Republic right. National Bank was a major example of that. But I'm not sure that... I'm ready to describe all Syrian Jews that way. That's a whole other matter.
It's a whole other, but in any event, my father was
born. So were you
living
in a Syrian Jewish area?
No, we lived, you mean here in New York?
No,
or in
Cairo? In Cairo.
No, in Cairo we lived in, my father came to Egypt as an infant. So in a way, I saw my work in this book as almost 100 years in the life of a family.
And you begin the book with the meeting of your parents, Leon and Edith. What happened?
Oh, I'm in love with that story, the cafe courtship.
Much older than she was.
He was. My dad was 22 years older than my mother, maybe more because, of course, his age is mysterious. But I always loved that story that takes place in this incredible cafe, which is sort of the height of fashion. It's called La Parisiana, the Parisian, and it's owned by a Greek, but it serves continental food and every language is spoken. And you have to picture my delicate and very bookish 19-year-old mother sitting there with her own sort of chaperone mother, and across the way is this tall, very handsome man dressed all in white, who has never read a book, but he's smitten by her. And the deal, the transaction is concluded then and there in that cafe, marriage. And so she finds herself married off to him.
Despite the age gap and everything else, and also the differences in their backgrounds. Your mother's mother had a terrible marriage. Her right. husband had sold one of his babies or their babies at a market.
At a souk. It's one of yeah. the haunting stories
that's,
of my childhood.
That's one of those shocking things that we can't even imagine happening.
I know. And for the purposes of this book, I had to really immerse myself in sort of the life of old Cairo. I took more than a year off from my job at the Wall Street Journal to work on it so that I had no distractions whatsoever. But look, there are two characters which stand out for me in this book. My father, of course, the man in white, and this hopelessly frail and vulnerable, probably mad grandmother, Alexandra, you know, the woman who was so helpless that she couldn't comb her own hair, that she had a governess to do it. And yes, she had been haunted by a terrible marriage, that one of her babies had been sold in the souk.
And for what reason?
I think it was, the sense was that she was a terrible, they were poor, she was a terrible housewife. She had grown up in a very wealthy Alexandrian family. And in very wealthy families, girls were taught really to do nothing. You were supposed to marry and marry well. And she didn't marry well. And finding herself in an impoverished situation, she didn't know what to do, you know? She was supposed to have maids and governesses and servants and people at her beck and call. When those safe, she could never have a job, even though she was educated. So instead, you know, my mother grew up in penury, but she did grow up with a lot of books and with a love of the cinema. And I think she passed both of those passions on to me.
My guest is Lucette Lagnado, who's a senior special writer and investigative reporter for The Wall Street Journal, author of a number of books, the most recent memoir kind of a family called The Man in the White Shark Skin Suit, My Family's Exodus from Old Cairo to the New World. It is published by Echo. Now, when World War II broke out, was there any concern in that community, or was it pretty much insulated until Nasser, until Farouk, I guess, was overthrown and Nasser came to power?
Well, that was the fascinating part of the research. You know, because I've always been an investigative reporter, It was sort of really odd to find myself investigating my own family and my own culture and trying to decide what standards to use. For example, you know, when I would hear stories about my father's mistresses and the like. But the most fun part was sort of recreating the life in World War II Cairo. And it was to answer your question, it was sort of mixed. On the one hand, it was oddly shielded from the war, even though there were thousands of British troops. The best story I ever heard was at Gruffy's, this legendary patisserie, which still exerts a hold on all our imaginations, all of us who came from that world, because it had this magical pebbled garden and served, you know, fresh chantilly cream. Well, at Gruppi's, they were serving pastry made in clarified butter at the height of the war. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, you had an absolute sense that, you know, the world was at war, that there was extraordinary misery because you had refugees passing through Cairo, and there was a sense of franticness. They could never get far away. And then, of course, you have the seminal battle. Seminal battle. The Nazis are literally on the doorsteps of Egypt. And this is, it would be their prize. And the war has been going very badly for the Allies. And then, you know, the Jews feel completely vulnerable. The Jews of Alexandria move to Cairo to get away because, you know, the Nazis are going to come in any minute. And one of my favorite stories in the book is, what does my dad do on the eve of the Battle of El Alamein when all is thought to be lost? He goes to a favorite house of his and plays poker that night. But I was told that by the daughter of the house.
Well, the King Farouk was a playboy, so I guess that was part of the sensibility of the country at the time.
Oh, yeah, and in the Mahfouz novels, as you know, the men always have mistresses. It seems to be par for the course. People keep asking me, you know, Lucette, how could you, like, write that about your father? Didn't you feel guilty? And I was oddly clinical about it. It was fascinating to me, and I've been told it may have been enchanting to me.
So things change immediately after Farouk was deposed?
I think you have a gradual process that begins with the creation of the State of Israel. I think, you know, what's fascinating to me is that even today we're still feeling the effects of these convulsive events in the Middle East, though we prefer not to talk about that element of this, namely the exodus of the Jews of the Arab countries, nearly a million. But life begins to change first after Israel, and you see the beginnings. Jews begin to leave, and then after the king falls, oh, my God, there's amazing despair, because even though, you know, he's known as corrupt and a playboy and whatever, he did protect. He was this protective force. And so more Jews leave, and then, of course, with the sort of rise of the Nasser regime, he takes over in 54. It becomes pretty horrible because
and
he
makes
it clear.
And then Israel joined Britain and France on attacking Egypt because Nasser had taken control of the Suez Canal. And
right.
I assume that that was the last straw as far as Nasser was concerned. Throughout all the foreigners, the Jews, your family moved to Paris, which makes sense because you spoke French.
Right.
How did you wind up in the United States? And why didn't you move to Israel as so many other relatives did?
I think it was always the question for my family, where do we go? And the choice really became pretty clear that it would be either Israel or America. Most of my father's relatives had made the exodus after 56, and they'd gone to Israel. And not, by the way, that happily either. It became a home for them, but a very difficult home. And many of my relatives died almost within a year, which makes me think, you know, of this idea of a flower taken out of its soil. And in any event, my father agonized, but I had brothers who were of the, you know, draftable age. So they had this feeling that America was more promising. And so
he was a fish out of water and never really recovered after he came here. He sure wasn't the dapper person he had been. And your mother had to go to work, which is something that would have been unthinkable in that culture.
There's a real, you know, I think about my book, and I've thought about this for a long time, even before I wrote it, that, you know, we love our myths, and none is more powerful than the myth of opportunity, immigration, the American dream. But for my father, it was really the opposite of that.
You went to Cairo in 2005. Obviously, you had couldn't have remembered very much because you left when you were so young. But how different was it?
I think that it was a shocking, shocking experience. You know, Jews had begun going back to Egypt for, you know, at least 10 or 20 years. And yet my family, with the exception of one member, never went. It was almost we were traumatized from that one moment when we left. You had to sign at what was called en aller sans retour, where you vowed you were leaving and never coming back. And here I was actually greeted at the airport by a delegation from the Egyptian government. It helps to be a reporter for an American newspaper. And then I walk through these streets that I'd imagined for so long, and I see this amazing decrepitude. The city that had once been so gorgeous, and in some ways it still is gorgeous, but you have to almost look beneath layers and layers of dust and grime and, you know, this basically a crumbling infrastructure, which really makes one wonder, what did Egypt gain by throwing out everybody?
Lucette Lagnado will be signing books next Saturday, the 11th at 5:30 at the East Hampton Library. For more information, you can visit our show page at wnyc.org. The book is The Man in the White Sharkskin Suit, My Family's Exodus from Old Cairo in the New World. It is published by Echo. And now you go back to being a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Good luck with Rupert Murdoch as the new owner and new boss.
Yes.
Do you think you'll be doing the same sort of thing? Or can we expect our articles on our movie stars acting poorly?
Well, you know, I look at the change as the way my parents sort of lived through a revolution. I'm living through my own revolution, and I hope for the best, but I'm going to kind of keep focused on my story.
Thank you so much for being
with us.
Appreciate
it.